Hey, howdy, hi, welcome back to Game Changers, the podcast where we unpack, unravel, and unashamedly gush over games. This week, we're going back to our roots with part one of what games got us into gaming. We're talking about the consoles we played them on, the themes we've remained attracted to, and what games we'd recommend starting out with for folks who haven't gamed before. Choose your champion and start a new save file as we talk about our formative Game Changers. Alistair, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Game Changers.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm also joined here with Harry again.
Yo!
Thank you for co-hosting with me and making this an easier ordeal.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad it's a pleasure to be here. You've got beer in hand, tablet in the other. What more could you want?
What tablet? Oh, yeah, that tablet. Yeah.
What tablet did you think I was talking about?
That was a bad
one. It was a pretty bad show. So this week we're chatting about the games that got us into games. We're sort of going back to our roots a little bit. And yeah, Alistair, what were the games that got you into games, really?
Well, I would have been probably 4 years old when I played my first game, I think.
Four?
Yeah, I'd say four. Is that young?
How did you get introduced to it?
So I had a next door neighbor who was, I think, about 16 at the time, and his mum was friends with my mum and he used to babysit me.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, in retrospect, like a mega gaming nerd in the coolest way. And so even in like 1998, he had like Doom on PC. He had like Ocarina of Time on N64.
Oh.
And he would always have it like the month it came out as well.
Wow. So he was pretty on top of the releases then.
Definitely.
And Ocarina of Time, arguably one of the greatest games of all time.
Oh, of course. Exactly. That's got to be on so many people's lists of getting people into games because it was really a big breaker of the industry at the time. There wasn't anything like it.
Mm-hmm. I remember, like, I've got some vague memories, and I definitely remember going to his house, sitting there, and he wouldn't even let me play it at first because it was like his new toy.
Rude.
It was actually Mario 64 first, and then he got Ocarina of Time later, but he'd boot it up and just that super nostalgic like menu music from Super Mario 64.
Hello.
It just completely like hits you right whenever I hear it now. I'm just like, oof. Memories.
Right in the feels,
yeah.
I remember having that on DS, and when his little face popped up on the screen, you could, like, grab him by the nose or grab him by the hat, right?
Yeah, you could do that in the original.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy, yeah.
It's so good, and you could, like, spin him around and, like, just grab him. It was so fun.
That game was just, like, mind-blowing for me. Like, I've heard since that when people played Mario 64, for example, at the time, it was like, holy shit, 3D platforming is a thing now.
Yeah. But
back then, it was like, this is what a game is. It was like actually the first thing I played pretty much. And yeah, it was insane. I pretty much only remember just running around the castle like exterior, which is basically like not even a level. It's just like the lobby, basically.
Yeah. Well, did you ever activate? So, because you remember there was a moat around the castle?
Yeah.
Did you ever activate so that the water, you depleted the water and then there was a secret door that led you to a room of different kinds of paintings in the bottom level of the castle?
I think Joel, my next door neighbor, had done that. So on his save file, like he showed me that. So I do remember that, but there was no way. I could barely string together like a jump.
I think 64 was like the first, I wouldn't say, it is kind of open world. It's sort of like between open world and platformer. Mm. It's a really weird sort of genre. I until you brought that up, that wasn't one I was going to mention. And then now it's all just flooding back. The little monkey that, there were a couple levels where there was a monkey involved that would steal your hat.
And I don't think I even got that far.
Oh, really?
No.
I remember just having my mind blown. You take your hat off. And I, at this stage, I don't think anyone had seen Mario without a cap.
And it was just the most bizarre experience.
That was also the first time Mario had been voiced, I think, at least in a game. So like,
really?
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
So people would like boot it up. People who'd been playing Mario since, you know, 85 or whenever the first proper Mario game came out. And it's just like, it's a me, Mario. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's his voice.
And they were just like, oh, I guess he's Italian now.
Next level.
Oh, that's so cool. Were there any other games that your neighbor played that you sort of had exposure to?
Yeah, so Ocarina of Time, when that came out, which I think I probably only played it a couple of months after that originally playing 64, but that was mind-blowing as well. I remember feeling like it was so realistic, like having the horse, Epona, whatever it's called, on...
Epona, yeah.
Yeah, he would like he'd like take me out to Hyrule Field and just let me like wander around in it
until it got dark. No!
And then it would get dark, and I'd like give the control back to him because I was too scared.
Oh, Alistair! That's so cute.
Yeah, and it was like that first feeling of playing a game that was like an imitation of real life. I guess it was almost like an immersive experience. I guess you feel like you are the character and the dangers are going to affect you rather than just something on the screen.
It's sort of like a fantasy simulation. Like you've got the simulation of having an open world with trees and villages and pots to smash and chickens to throw. But you know, then there's the Gorons and there's Ganon and there's so many amazing like fantasy elements to it that is, you know, it's the difference between playing something like Zelda or Animal Crossing and playing the Sims.
Yeah.
You know, it's got that element of something different.
That sword and shield, like iconic as.
So good. I remember we went to Tristan's house once and I saw when his little brother, I'm sure he's not so little now. I don't know how old he is. I remember like going to his room and I saw that he had
the
Hyrulean shield on his wall. And I was just like, sick. You have the coolest little brother I've ever met.
Just imagine him now. School in year 10 just taking his shield to
school. Gaming's much cooler now than it was when we were in high school.
Yeah,
gaming's a fucking thing now, isn't it? People making millions of dollars off it.
There are teenagers making, dude, the winner of the Fortnite contest this year was 13 years old and he won $50,000 was the loser's pool. It was like $30 million or something stupid
millions of dollars. But did you hear his speech?
No.
And, like his replies in social media, like people saying that Fortnite's really dangerous and they don't let them play it and
that's
stuff.
Dumb.
Yeah, and he was basically like, anyway, and he was basically saying, I mean, anything with a balanced lifestyle was his basic, like, general response was.
What a perfect way to like frame it, because so many adults are like, oh, Fortnite's ruining the youth of today, and it's like, no, you motherfucking boomers fucking up the planet with climate change and ruining the youth today. Actually, it's great that you brought that up because. I don't personally play Fortnite. I don't see the appeal of it. Like, I can understand it, but it's not for me. But that now in this age, in 2019, 2018, when it sort of was surfacing, has got to be if you think about it, is going to be the beginnings for a lot of kids for getting into games, right?
Mm.
Because it's such a cultural phenomenon and everyone they know in you know, in their school is playing Fortnite. You've sort of just got to be on board to be sort of to be relevant, to understand what everyone's talking about. And I'm sure for a lot of people that's led them on like into the world of gaming.
Definitely. I've got a 14-year-old cousin and he's just like, he never shuts up about A, Fortnite, B, Instagram, which neither of us I can really relate to.
Oh yeah, that's so weird. Oh my god. Yeah. Do you think it was the open world sort of element of Mario and Zelda that got you into it?
I think Mario was mostly just, this is a 3D game and like you're looking at a screen, but it's also a 3D world, because that was basically my first, definitely 100% the first 3D game I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
But Ocarina of Time was definitely like, because Hyrule Field in that game is, I think, also kind of the first time Zelda went in any way open world. Except Absolutely. For the first original game, which is technically open world, but it's 2D, so it's kind of different.
Yeah, I wouldn't quantify. I mean, I'm not like a games developer, but I don't think I would quantify 2D open world and 3D open world in the same bracket. I'm very much of the same opinion as you, that like it has to be more believable than that. It has to feel like you can orient yourself around XYZ axis.
Yeah, I agree. And because, yeah, you can walk diagonally. Like, imagine that.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just like a big 2D map. It's it's a world, you know, as opposed to a map.
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, that blew my mind. And the way you could, like, summon the horse with the actual ocarina and, like, play it was kind of
awesome. And the different songs, like, Saria's song's got to be one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite ocarina song?
Can you play Song of Storms? You can, right?
Yeah, Song of Storms. Song of Storms is very good. What about what about you, Harry? Did you have a favorite Ocarina of Time song?
For me, it was also Song of Storms.
Ah.
Yeah, and I can't tell you the multiple plays that I've done on YouTube of Song of Storms. Yeah,
that dubstep version by Asphyxia.
There's so many different. I mean, there's like dozens. But yeah, Asphyxia was definitely one of them. Yeah.
I think you introduced me to that. You might have introduced me to Asphyxia on YouTube. But folks, if you are into Zelda and you're into dubstep, go find Asphyxia on YouTube. He has some amazing, amazing mixes. I remember listening to that during my HSC at like 3 a.m. trying to get really motivated to work. And it was like, no. And I was just like, gotta study. Epona's song was pretty good as well.
Epona's song, yeah, calling her.
They were all good. They were all such good songs.
Yeah,
they
did very well.
Amazing soundtrack.
Yeah, they did really well with that.
I think Nintendo historically has a pretty good track record of soundtracks, to be honest.
Oh, I love
Zelda soundtracks, the Animal Crossing soundtracks, the Pokemon soundtrack. Like everything just seems to fit with the genre of the game.
Yeah.
And it's just so expertly orchestrated. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why it's probably inspired so many people to make a whole bunch of mixes of it, because they just want to hear it in so many different varieties.
Yeah, the neck level of nostalgia.
Yeah.
So do you find, Alistair, that the games that you were interested in terms of, like, you know, Zelda or Mario and their like open world elements, do they translate to the games that you're playing today or that you're interested in today?
Yes, actually, definitely. Like, I'm really into platformers still. Like, whenever I can play them, I play them. And open world games like Skyrim and The Witcher 3 and stuff, like, have been some of my favorites.
Yes. I've not personally I've played Skyrim once and I really, really enjoyed it. I've been meaning to get back on top of it. But everyone I know doesn't really have a bad thing to say about Skyrim besides, like, the memes that they
share. Well, it's got one bad thing about it, which is, it's aged awfully, so if you didn't enjoy it insanely much at the time, it's probably not going to, like, pull you in now, to be honest, but that's all right.
There are a couple of good monster factories on Skyrim. In fact, I think they did a 5-part series on Skyrim. You know, Harry, Griffin and Justin McElroy, they have a series on YouTube called Monster Factory, and they did a special 5-part series called, like, Is It Art or something, where they basically the series revolves around them making really, really ugly and horrific characters in character creation. And as someone that spends way too long in character customization, I wholeheartedly just adore their work. Do you find that you spend time in character creation, or are you just ready to jump in?
I spent so long.
Yes, as a fellow, like, arty sort of graphic designer, sort of creative person, you're just like, I need to fine tune this.
I've probably spent more time in Skyrim's character creation than I have playing a game, to be honest.
Nice.
I mean, that's what appeals to it, right? Is, you know, a lot of those games where you can just, you have so much, when you, like, for something like Skyrim, where you have so much authority over nose shape and forehead indentation and cheekbone height, it takes you so long to fine tune it.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm actually the same as well.
I
spend a lot of time on character creation. You know, you just got to be proud of, you know, what you're doing, what you're playing.
Yeah, well, there are some MMOs like, I know World of Warcraft, even like Pokemon Go, where like the customization is not that great. Like there's really only a few, like compared to how long it's been around and like the track history of Blizzard and the track history of Nintendo, like you would expect more out of them, that you'd be able to have it more custom. Like literally in Pokemon Go, you can't edit anything except for your eye color and your hair color and your skin color.
And you're just a skinny...
You're just a skinny girl or a skinny boy with, like, you're a girl with a ponytail and a boy with, like, an average, like, medium heck. I'm just like, Nintendo, you have so many games where you can edit so many... Why can't you do it like the other Pokemon? I don't know. I don't know, man. Maybe they just don't care about the people who are still playing Pokemon Go. But what about you, Harry? What were your sort of... What were the games that got you into games?
All right, so I mean, there are different eras, but as a young child, there are a few puzzle games, just weird Windows 98, Windows 99 puzzle games. One of them, I think, I forget, I've actually tried to look it up, but haven't had any luck. I think it was called UM.
Really?
Yeah, I'll try and something find it. Like that. And basically, you're just a little dude, and you got to... it's a 2D thing, and you just got to cruise around and break down trees and rocks and shit and just try and find your way through a puzzle. And it gets harder and harder as you go through. No, that's not it, Cass.
Damn it.
That looks very modern.
Okay, we'll give
you
a second.
That really got me into games because having a puzzle on the screen and being a little guy that has to find your way through it, that really entertained me, I suppose, figuring out a way around that and a way all the problems that it gave me. Really got me into it. And from there, just, you know, one thing led to another, you know, Quake 1 came out.
Quake 1, what's Quake 1?
That was before I sort of started playing around, because I think Quake came out in 96. So that was a PC game.
So it would have been about four-ish.
Shoot 'em up sort of thing. I started playing that when I discovered that it existed. and then, yeah, that was like sort of the next level for me.
How did you discover I'm
my
trying
dad,
to find it now.
My dad.
Really?
Yeah, no, he just showed me it because he was doing it.
Was it one of those games that, like, you know, like Minecraft or Solitaire that you already have on the computer? Because I don't
know.
So your dad went out of his way to download a video game.
Okay, no.
Because your dad does not think about
the year we're in. He didn't download shit, all right? This was a fucking massive box with a CD in it.
Yeah, well, that's what I was like. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
sorry. He went out of his way to get a game that was not already on the computer, is
yes,
my point.
Yes.
That's very millennial of me to say, he went and downloaded it when this is the year of CDs.
And from what I can remember, this it might have not been, but I swear it was something, it was a very short, like two-letter, something like, fuck you. It was something like that. Something like I dedicated 10 minutes to try and figure out I went onto the internet and tried to figure this out.
Windows.
I couldn't find anything. Yeah. Yes, he's doing
okay,
it.
Okay. Here's the thing. If it's only two letters, like,
yeah, how hard could it be?
How hard could it be?
I'll call my dad on the podcast right now. Okay. Call him in.
Here, I'll bring him up.
Good idea calling from your.
Why?
Because he'll pick up.
Harry's parents pick up for me, but not for Harry. Oh, that's really. Do you want to talk about that for a second? Do you need help, Harry? Do you need?
That's a different podcast.
Do you need someone to talk to? Oh my God, Daryl usually picks up.
Come on, Dad.
I'm concerned for him.
Oh, hi, Dad. You there?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Dad. Hey, Dad. Do you remember? Way back in the day, I'm not sure how old I would have been. But it would have been around 1990, I have no idea how old I would have been. Let me just think. Yeah, about 98, 99, right?
Late 90s, early noughties.
Yeah. I played a game that you bought. It was called, I thought it was called, basically you're this little dude and you move around the screen and you solve puzzles and you move on to the next screen. Do you remember that game?
It was on the computer.
Yeah, it was on the computer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's on disc.
No fucking shit. Are you serious? Can you please find that? This is crucial, Dad.
It's where you talking about the guy and solve a puzzle.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was all different. Like sometimes one thing and then sometimes it was another thing. It was called...
Yeah, it was like a weird two-letter word or something.
I mean, how diverse could it be?
Yeah, it was
Land of Um.
Land of Um.
Land of Um.
Land of Um.
Googling it right now. Land of Um.
We're looking this up. Dad, just stay on the line. This is genius.
He's done it.
Yep, Land of Um.
Yay! Oh my God. Dad, everybody.
Dad, could you please have a look for that? If there's a possibility that you have the game, please look for it.
But it's on a floppy, but it's a hard floppy, you know, one of the French ones.
Oh my God, it's not even CD, guys. It's a floppy disk. It's a fucking floppy disk. So that's cool. No, we can definitely plug that in. There's a way to plug that in. I'm sure they have it.
Do they really have that sort of thing still?
Oh no, they definitely have it. Okay, Dad, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'll call you later.
Bye.
Okay, thanks, Dad.
Sorry. Wow.
He knew it.
That is awesome.
Oh, my God.
Land of Um. How did he fucking get that?
How?
Dude, dead
that
set.
Was 20
it's
years
been
20 ago.
20 years.
Your dad, what a champ.
He's a god.
I've just Googled it, and now I can understand why you think it's called Um, because on the case, here's the graphic design. It says the Land of Um, but the Land of is all on one line, and it's like...
Tiny, tiny words.
It's like... 7 PT and then is like 72 PT. So I can absolutely understand why you just thought the game was called Harry.
Yeah. And how wrong was I? It's not even a CD. It's like a fucking floppy disk.
Floppy disk.
I didn't even remember their existence.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, look, the most important thing is that we found out what it was called and that you weren't crazy.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you guys. Yeah.
Oh my.
Sorry about that, Al.
No, that was good. I want to play this now.
Give it a go, mate.
I just Googled it. It looks like mega interesting, actually, like strangely. So for you, Harry, what was it about the lure of the Land of that pulled you in?
The idea, the concept of the game is to solve the puzzle on each screen and then move to the next screen.
Yeah.
And the puzzles got progressively harder as you went, obviously, like any other game ever.
Yeah, like Celeste.
Sure. And that concept was very interesting to me. I loved solving the puzzle and moving on to the next screen. It was very rewarding. That's what pulled me in.
Yeah.
From there, the idea of solving puzzles and moving on to the next step, the visual representation of that puzzle, that got me into it.
So it was like aesthetically pleasing as much as it was a brain teaser.
Yep.
That's like, it doesn't surprise me much at all because you're a very like solutions-based guy. You're a very practical solutions-based dude. You're just like, whenever you're presented with a problem, it's like you just go into like iterating mode in your mind and you're like, bup, 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 there's the solution. Bup, 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 there's a solution. Like,
that's right. Yeah.
You're all about solving problems.
And I'm not always good under pressure, but the you had time to think about things.
There weren't timers on the puzzles or anything.
On some of them there were, but on most of them you can sit there, think about it, and then execute. Ah, and I like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And as a kid, you know, it's probably better that way.
But what about you, Alistair? Were there games you discovered alone or with friends that sort of brought you into games? Was it more of like a solitary endeavor, or did the aspect of being social bring you into it?
I wouldn't say. Oh, yeah, no, it was definitely a big part of it because I never had, like, a console in those early years or really any gaming device initially. So, like, a lot of my first experiences of games were at other people's houses. Like I can say we all know Liam. I remember playing with him Halo for the first time.
Halo, yes!
Yeah, and that was, like, mind-blowing as.
Another open world. I'm noticing a theme here.
Well, it's not really open world, but it's like it's got a lot of freedom in its levels.
Yeah, freedom's a good way of describing it.
Yeah, and just the gunplay in that, like a console first person shooter in comparison with everything I played before, was just crazy as well. And I love Halo now.
I haven't played Halo in so long. Halo was definitely a game changer. Oh, I said the thing. In terms of. I think it was when I was really young. I didn't play Halo as much as my stepbrother was obsessed with Halo. He would have his friends over and play Halo. He would play Halo with his friends remotely. Halo, Halo, Halo all the time.
I can think that.
Yeah, like it was like a it had that fantasy element, you know, of aliens and war, and I mean, war isn't a fantasy element, let's be real here. But I remember playing with like an ex-boyfriend where we would only equip certain items, like there was a particular hammer that was a really heavy hitter.
Yeah. Gravity hammer,
that's the one. Like gravity hammer and some other like stupidly high power weapons, and we'd only enable those and scatter them amongst the map and just run around, and it would be a complete nightmare.
Yeah, some amazing times have been had.
Halo had a fun storyline.
Yeah, it's like a space opera. It's one of the earliest that I know of games that had that real like epic scale in its story.
Yeah, it is a space opera. I've never heard it described that way, but that's actually so apt. That's a really good one. There are so many iterations. What's the most recent Halo?
Halo 5, I think.
Yeah, surely. And that's a Xbox exclusive, isn't it?
Yeah. I think they're all coming to PC now, which I'm looking forward to.
So the first one was Halo Combat Evolved.
Yep.
And then the next one that's coming out is Halo Infinite, which is coming out in 2020.
Yeah.
What were your experiences with Halo, Harry?
I played the original. I played it with Liam, who...
That's what Alistair just said.
Yeah, who... Sorry, I just took a break.
No, that's right.
Yeah, played that with Liam, mostly at his place. And it was, probably for about a year that was going strong. And we used to do Assault in the Control Room, which is one of the levels, one of the longer, harder levels. And we used to do that on... What was the hardest difficulty?
Legendary.
Yeah, legendary. At that age, that was like a full day event. You really need to sit down and work at that all day.
Yeah.
And
one of you dies and the other one's like hanging back.
You'd have to work. So true. I'd love to have a go at that now and see if I could actually make any progress like on my own.
So Halo Combat Evolved came out on Xbox 2001. Mm-hmm. Halo 2 was released in 2004. Windows Vista was in 2007.
What does Windows Vista have to do with Halo?
They have different releases on different forms.
I think Halo 2 got released on PC on Windows Vista for some reason.
Oh, there you go. Okay, cool. I apologize, Cassie.
Yeah, how dare you? Halo 3 is the final game in the main Halo trilogy. And so the third one was released on September 25 in 2007. And so that was the original three, which I'm guessing that's the one you guys are talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely a huge impact. The original and second game. Yeah. And the second game was massive. I mean, the drop for that was just ridiculous.
But I find that so interesting that you both found that through Liam. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess that's probably a good segue into
Liam, just say this.
No, go for it.
Liam was outstanding at the game, and everyone in our class in primary school, actually, I'm pretty sure we're all aware that he went to Melbourne for a competition and came fourth.
What? When he was in primary school?
When he was in primary school.
That doesn't surprise me at all, because Liam is just a god at gaming.
He is a god, yeah.
He has a mind. He's a thinker. He has a way with a keyboard and a mouse. He does his thing. I don't know.
He's extraordinary.
He's extraordinary at gaming, yeah. And he does it for his own personal, not even gain. It's not gain. He just does it because he loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like the Rain Man of video games.
Yeah. And he found that with Halo, and holy shit, he destroyed it.
That's incredible. Mm. Were there any other games that Liam introduced you to, Alistair?
I remember he had Gran Turismo 4 on that. Like, I played the first one on PS1 and I loved that, but then I played 4 and it was like this massive jump.
Gran Turismo. That's like a classic PlayStation game.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had the Gran Turismo on PlayStation 2, I want to say. I was never into the racing games, but I knew a lot of people that just absolutely adored them.
Yeah, I was one of those. also, Age of Empires 2 was...
A classic.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, I never got into it. I played it a few times. I played it a few times at a few different places. Never really got into it, but I can totally appreciate that game.
Yes. Yeah.
How long were you playing that for, Al?
I literally still play it.
Nice.
No way.
The original, the same game.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's remastered on Steam. Like, and it's got a big community around it. Like, I don't play it online really because I'm bad, but like, it's so good. It's still
holds up. Awesome. Yeah, awesome.
That's so cool. Oh, that's so magical to be able to still play a game that
that old. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I think I said this on a previous episode of the podcast. I used to have Super Mario 64 on the DS, and there were a couple games that I kept and a couple games that I like traded in, like Nintendogs and shit. Like, Nintendogs was fun, but I'm not going to play it again. I think I lost Mario 64, and it just, I remember my heart dropped when I realized I didn't have it anymore, and I just thought, I will chop off my arms and legs for another Mario 64, you know?
You know, it'll be really hard to play it then.
How do you mean?
Because you'll have no arm.
Look, I'm sure there are some cyberneticists that could.
Cool.
Yeah, cyberneticists. I'm deciding that that's a word. I'm sure there are some cyberneticists. I'm sorry, I had too many bears. Bears.
God damn it.
Too many bears. I'm sure there are some cyberneticists out there that would allow me to just play it with my brain. Or get this. Here's a concept. Super Mario 64, VR.
Oh, shit.
Can you imagine racing the fuck out against Koopa Troopa?
Could work.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and like strangling that monkey for your hat. Watch the life drain from his eyes.
See, I need some Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie VR.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Did you guys ever do fighting games like Tekken or Mortal Kombat?
I had like a demo disc for my PS1, which had Tekken 3 on it. And even though I could only just play like one fight and then I'd have to like reboot the whole console, I would just do that over and over and over again.
Oh, that's awesome. I remember being 12 and going out. I'd save up my pocket money for so long. I did so many chores to earn like $300 to go buy this was back in 2008. And it was for a PSP 3000. I got home and I had the best night. Like, the story mode on Tekken Dark Resurrection, like my sister didn't have one, so she would like snuggle in bed with me and we would like watch it together and like unlock all of the characters and like the more ranks you would rise up, like Berserker or God mode or like all that sort of thing was just, it God was mode. Yeah, I mean, that's what really, really got us into it, and we were able to like fight together eventually, and our cousins had PlayStation Portables, and it was so good. PlayStation Portable was pretty great.
Yeah, I never got into it myself.
Yeah. Well, what other consoles did you guys, you didn't have to own them, of course. I know that that's, growing up, it's kind of tough to convince your parents to buy those unless they're just sort of like, sure. But did you have any more experiences at like friends' places where you discovered games that made you more interested in them?
I did actually own one console for the majority of my childhood from about the age of 6. My next door neighbor, Joel, when he got sick of his PlayStation 1, very kindly gave it to my parents to give to me for Christmas.
Oh, that's so generous.
That was such a boss move. And like, that pretty much made my year and the year after and like my whole life pretty much, because I'm obsessed with the PS1 now.
Yeah, PlayStation's awesome. So what games did you have on the PlayStation 1?
Well, he had tons, but I only got like a couple of them because I only got the ones that were G-rated.
Of course.
So like, I had Gran Turismo 1, which was awesome. So I used to like get my licenses on that and like just grind that game like crazy. And I had Cool Borders 3, which was a pretty sick snowboarding game.
Ooh.
And what he had that I didn't get, that I actually found in a cupboard one day when I was a few years older and I was really pissed off, was he had Metal Gear Solid, which is considered like one of the best games on the PlayStation, and
no way. Right up there.
Yeah, and I never got to play it, and like, and now I can't get into it because I missed that boat. So that's kind of a tragedy.
So you've got regrets. I mean, there's people that are like, oh, Metal Gear Solid on PlayStation 1 was so good, but you can't in 2019 go back onto the PlayStation. Like, even if you have a PlayStation 1 and you play it, it's not it's just not the same.
Yeah, it's not like the spine-tinglingly amazing cinematic experience that it was.
Rip your Metal Gear Solid experience. I'm praying for you, Alistair.
Yeah, truly a tragedy. But I also got that demo disc, and on that demo disc was like Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, Medieval, which is a pretty sick game that I actually own now, and Tekken, and like all those games then became like tasters for what I ended up loving.
Absolutely. And did you go on to buy any different iterations of those games, like Crash Bandicoot or Tekken?
Yes, like probably the next game I got, which was probably like a year later, probably also for Christmas, was Crash Team Racing. And that game is hands down my number one favorite game of all time.
Of all time,
man.
I was watching Crunchyroll the other day and I saw an ad for they were redoing that on PlayStation 4. Is that something you'd be interested in?
No, it's come out and like it looks amazing, and I'm really happy for everyone who's been able to experience it for the first time. But I can't do it. Like, I need the purity of the original. I have the original, so like I can't.
Oh my gosh. That's fair. I used to have on PlayStation Portable, I had they called it Crash of the Titans instead of Clash of the Titans, which
is
a throwback to mythology. That was a really good one where you could hack lots of different monsters, and they all had different abilities. So you could get in like a big slimy one that would spray like acid slime, and you could jump on another one that had great big fists that could like smash through walls and stuff. Crash was super formative for like a lot of kids, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be. There's the classic, like, Uka Uka, and is it Cindy, the blonde one?
there's Coco, who's like the sister one, and then there's the like weirdly sexually suggestive girlfriend one who they cut out from the later games.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Amazing.
Birth of a furry culture right there.
Look, I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum, but yuck.
Yeah.
So how do you think that those sort of open world games and those first person shooters impacted your taste for games today? Like, what sort of games are you interested in the moment, do you think, that spawned from those younger experiences?
Yeah, it's definitely like the things I played first are the things I will always love, which is kind of, it's awesome, but it's also a little bit deterministic because it makes you realize like I could have played anything and I would still love it the same way I love these things. It's not because of what they are. It's just because I played it when I was like six.
It's the nostalgia value.
Yeah. It's at the same time, one of the coolest experiences I find is when you never played something back in the day and someone's like, this is amazing, and you go and you play it and you're like, wow, it actually is. And that's without the nostalgia. Like, when that happens, it's
incredible. When it's able to hold up after so long is really a blessing. I mean, I think that, you know, PlayStation 1 or like Nintendo 64 and those are company consoles have to be probably the biggest proprietors of childhoods for sure, or getting people interested into games at a younger age.
Yeah, they were kind of a big step up from the stuff that came before because of that 3D jump, I think.
As soon as 3D came in, it was just it was life-changing. I think that appealed to a lot of people that 2D didn't appeal to before. That for a lot of people was just felt so realistic and so immersive, and it was groundbreaking. I guess my final question would be, what game would you recommend to someone who is just starting to get into games or wants to get into games? What would you recommend as somewhere to start, something that ages well or something recent that will really just capture your interest?
Ooh, that's a hard one.
I need you to ask me that again. I mean, that's crazy.
So what game, if someone came to you in a bar, real cute girl, a real cute boy just comes up to you and it's like, and you were talking about World of Warcraft or RuneScape, and they were like, I've always like watched people on Twitch, and I've had friends that have been into games and I felt left out of conversations. Where would you recommend to start to get into gaming?
Well,
sips gin and tonic.
Well,
winks.
I'm in love already.
With me, baby.
I mean, I think, a game I got into when I was a kid that I had not really thought about fighting games before until I played Super Smash Bros. Melee on GameCube. I didn't have the GameCube, but I would play it at other people's houses. And I'm not sure if it was the community of going over and playing with a bunch of boys and like hanging out and being like accepted in a group, or if it was because I got to play as like a really cute little pink blob, or if it was the fighting itself. But like Super Smash Bros. Melee just ingrained itself inside me as one of my most formative experiences with gaming that made me want to just do it more.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, something like that. Like Harry and I have Smash Brothers. I'm just giving Harry some time because I can see the cogs turning, but Harry and I play Smash Brothers Ultimate on the Switch like at least twice a week. We're very much into it.
Yeah.
Have you played the new one at all, Alistair?
Just really briefly, I have. I love Smash. It's really, really, really fun. But I can't get into it the same way as I used to be able to, because I guess it's like, it's that feeling of playing against your friends that makes it so fun. So because yeah. I haven't got anyone to play it with, it's just sort of like, aw.
To this day, like I've owned Smash Brothers for like a year or like basically since it came out, and I have not touched the story mode. So I haven't done any of the spirits. I haven't done any of that. Like the fun of it is playing with your friends.
Yeah.
I think they can dress it up as much as they like. And I do know people that have like done the story mode and enjoy it like that. But for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's the party element of like versing your friends and beating them and destroying them, or like, let's do another one. I lost that one. We're not going to stop until I win, like a fun sort of situation there.
I would strongly agree with that as well. And another one as well that we're playing is Yoshi's Crafted World.
Yes.
In the same way, one that you would play with your friend or friends. I'm not sure. Is that one?
That's only two player.
It's just two player. Yeah. But honestly, I think that it feels like it's been built to play with another.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I think with the Harry and I are actually going through 100% it at the moment, and this is something we'll talk about on the next episode, which is couples gaming. But if we had just gone through, like, it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but we're going through 100% it. And it's not like Super Mario Brothers where it's a matter of like collecting all the coins for the level. It's collecting all the daisies. It's collecting all the red coins, it's finishing on full health, and it's doing the flip side where you have to collect 3 Poochie Pups within a certain time limit. So there's a lot to go through for each level. And the challenge of that is just phenomenal. Like I couldn't imagine doing that on my own. It would be a complete nightmare and I would not have the motivation to do it.
Answering the question, there are multiple platforms to play on, and on those multiple platforms, multiple different genres of games. If I had to randomly throw something at someone, mm-hmm. I would say start with the most popular.
I'll give you 3 to 5 games, or maybe 3 games. 3 games to recommend to start someone off, and it can be on any console. Assume that they could buy all the consoles.
Okay. How about first off, one of the most popular? Fortnite.
Okay.
A game which we've already spoken about.
Yep.
I've never played it. That's a lie. I have.
With Jay, probably. Yes. I think we've both played it with Jay like once.
And only some. I probably played 5 rounds, which is fuck all.
Yeah.
But if you're into shoot 'em up,
Battle Royale,
mass population games, they drop you in, fight till the end. There's one winner.
Sure.
Do that.
Yeah.
So
for competitive folks, Fortnite.
Yeah.
That's the most up-to-date battle royale. Or PUBG. I haven't personally played PUBG, but that's what Fortnite was ripped off. So PUBG or Fortnite is a good battle royale for folks that are interested in just competing for the sake of competitiveness. What are the other two you reckon you'd suggest?
Another hugely populated one that I play is World of Warcraft.
Yep.
Where it's a fantasy-based get in there and explore a massive expanse.
An MMORPG as well, so there's lots of other players that you can raid with, dungeon with, trade with, talk to, all that sort of stuff.
Which is a totally different type of game.
And it's huge.
Massive.
Very, very big. You can ride lots of fantasy creatures. You can fight lots of fantasy people. You can follow the storyline, or you can do your own quest lines as well.
Yeah.
Very beautiful.
The third one, I mean, even three games is a stretch here. Al, do you have a third?
No, I got two, though.
Mm. What are your two?
I reckon because this girl in the bar has probably never even touched a controller or, like, done anything remotely like that before.
Yep, let's say they've never done any variety of gaming.
Yeah, it's got to be something super basic, like with ultra basic controls. So I'm thinking, like, maybe Tetris would be a good one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in its base form, like, it's very addictive.
Yeah, and
right.
And people seem to be able to grasp it, even if they don't really understand games, which is, I guess, why it took off originally.
True, true.
I think I forgot the question, which was I've never, and the scenario that you've thrown us in where the girl at the bar's never played games before.
But I still think that that's pretty apt because, like, I jumped into WoW. I mean, I'd played MMOs before, but, like, WoW is pretty straightforward. Like, I skipped through the dialogue because I knew that it was just, like, when you've played MMOs before, you know the difference between fluff and crunch. for those not acquainted, like, fluff is, like, oh, just, like, random talking to sort of frame what you've actually got to do. So you can just sort of click through the dialogue if you're not interested, and then you'll have the quest come up in, you know, some other part of the user experience. But I think WoW is a good starter if you're looking to be social. If you, like, even if you want to do it on your own, I think there's a lot of variety and there's a lot of opportunity to play it the way that you want, whether you want to play with people online and have it as a collaborative effort, or if you just want to explore the world and level up yourself and just interact with the NPCs. I think that that still is applicable to someone that's never played before, and it is it illustrates, like, a really vivid world. Like, it's not like it's just one element that they get to see and then they're like, oh, okay, I get it. It's like they can just sort of keep deep diving and find their way around it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could totally hook someone who'd never played a game before.
Yeah, I mean, it did for Harry. Like, look, 15 years later, he's still going to play the WoW Classic coming out next month. So
so you mentioned Tetris, the first
one. Tetris is the first one. Very good. And there's a lot of, you can basically play it on any platform. So that's super universal and accessible.
Mm-hmm.
What about your second one?
Well, another thing that came to mind is, like, just something that you can play with friends that you kind of barely have to do anything to enjoy yourself. So, like, yeah. So I was thinking something like Smash would maybe even still be a bit too complicated because you'd just constantly be getting smacked into the, like, oblivion. Yeah, by your friends.
The thing that sucks about Smash is if you've never played before and you're playing against a bunch of people that have played prolifically, it fucking sucks for you to just get thrown off the map consistently.
You've all experienced that.
Yeah, just getting absolutely destroyed.
Maybe something like Mario Kart, or maybe something even simple like Mario Party, like where you're just playing mini games.
Oh.
Mario Party is the perfect entry level game. Dude, Alistair, Mario Party is
great suggestions.
That is a perfect suggestion. It has so much variety, so many mini games that are so diverse, and it plays like a normal board game, which everyone's played fucking board games. And if you don't, you don't even need to have had to. You just sort of progress through the line and whoever gets to the finish first wins.
Yeah, and then when you go in the minigame, just mash the A button.
And the girl at the bar, I can just imagine it now. I mean, a couple of tequilas.
Yeah.
There's only success.
You want to come back to my place and play some Mario Party? I can imagine that going down so well. Is there anything else that you sort of want to touch on with games that got you into games?
I do have to give a shout out to Pokemon because I had that on Game Boy Pocket, like before even the Well, I think the Game Boy Color existed, but I didn't have one. So I played it in black and white. Like, not that it was really a color game, but anyway, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'll have to get you on for the Pokemon episode. I will do an entire episode dedicated to Pokemon because I know folks that are just so into it.
I'd be pretty good for that, actually.
Yes. Yeah, if you're into exploring and 100%ing, experiencing characters and challenges and I think that experiencing how to level things up and how your character levels up and acquiring different sort of powers and interests and a good level of customization in the recent games, like from X and Y, Shield and Sword, Moon and Sun onwards, in terms of like being able to have more authority over your character and stuff.
It's Pokemon basically an entry level JRPG, effectively, which I'm not that into, but it's actually, could totally get people into that.
I mean, and it's excellent as well because Nintendo just keeps coming up with iterations of Pokemon. So if you're looking to get into Pokemon without looking to play on the Game Boy or Game Boy Advance or Game Boy Color or DS, like it's out on Switch, it's out on 3DS, it's super, super accessible. If you just wanted to start with a Pokemon game on a reasonably cheap console now, you could buy Pokemon X or Y on 3DS. And that would be an excellent starter, or Pokemon
perfect suggestion.
Pokemon Pikachu or Eevee, Pokemon Go Pikachu, Pokemon Go Eevee, whatever it's called on the Switch, which I have as well. It's beautiful. It's got updated graphics. It has basically the same. It has the exact same concept, but it is just more visually appealing with a couple of added Pokemon in there for each iteration. Pokemon's a great place to start if you're looking to get into games where you can experience leveling and some great NPC dialogue as well. And storyline.
Well said.
Each storyline is essentially the same, with the exception of, changing character names and moving on from that. So we've got Pokemon, Tetris, Mario Party, World of Warcraft, and what was your other one, Harry?
Fortnite.
Oh, yeah, Fortnite.
Yeah, but Alistair, some great suggestions, some basic games to start with, which is I didn't start with that. I just went, oh, my God, let's go popular, Fortnite.
No, but still good. If someone was playing Tetris and they saw someone else playing Fortnite, they'd probably go and play Fortnite.
Well, like Tetris, Solitaire, Minecraft, like all those like real early games. Like if you want to like begin at the OG, there's a very linear path from those very early puzzle games to the expansive and extremely detailed open world games like Breath of the Wild now. Which if you've never played games before and you play Breath of the Wild, also a good place to start because it just starts you off from the extremely basic point of like, here's a bow and arrow, here's a sword, go explore like 300 kilometers of deserts and snow and, mountains and whatever. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to go via the story. You can just find shrines or you can find Korok seeds or you just get to walk around and have a fucking good time. Sweet. Oh, okay. Well, we will definitely get you on again for the Pokemon episode, Alistair. That would be awesome.
Is there a dedicated Pokemon episode?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck me.
But in any case, Alistair, thank you so much for coming on for this one and making some time for us.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Changers. If there's a particular game or theme you'd like us to explore, email us in at contactgcpodcast@gmail.com. Until then, we'll catch you on the flip side.